The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, Freakier Friday star Sophia Hammonds got crucial advice from Lindsay Lohan. Prioritize your health. This article was written by P. Claire Dodson on August 9th. Warning, spoilers for Freakier Friday ahead. I had a huge Avril Lavigne phase when I was younger, says Sophia Hammonds, who plays Lily in Freakier Friday, the sequel to the 2003 film starring a then-teenage Lindsay Lohan. Hammonds remembers watching the original film when she was 12 or 13 and loving Lohan's character Anna's rock and roll style. Then, recently, I was talking to Lindsay, and she told me that the inspiration for Anna's look was Avril Lavigne. I was like, oh, this actually makes sense now. And don't get her started on Chad Michael Murray, who reprises his role of Jake in the film. Julia Butters, who plays Harper, and I were so excited for Chad. I remember he had to come to set for a fitting or something, and we were like, is Chad here? Is Chad here? And then we ended up saying hi, she laughs. An Avril Lavigne phase, a Chad Michael Murray crush, an experience watching Freakier Friday as a preteen, these are millennial-coded activities. But Hammonds is only 18 years old. In the movie, however, she plays both high schooler Lily and body-swapped Tess, reprised by Jamie Lee Curtis, who is now in her 60s. In Freakier Friday, Lily has recently moved from the UK to Los Angeles with her dad, Eric, Manny Jacinto, after the death of her mom. The plot parallels what Anna experiences in the original movie. Part of Anna's central conflict is learning to accept a new addition to their family while holding on to the memory of her dad. Lily and Harper are classmates turned nemeses who are forced together when Eric and Anna, reprised by Lohan, fall in love and start to plan their wedding. But then the four-way body swap strikes. Surfer girl Harper switches with her mom Anna, who is now a record producer for Maitreyi Ramakrishnan's pop star Elle. Meanwhile, type A fashion girl Lily switches with her future step-grandma, Tess. Chaos, joyrides, and life lessons ensue as Lily and Harper hatch a plan to break their parents up and get their bodies back. It's funny, I have two sides of me, and one is Lily pretty much, and the other Tess, just coincidentally, Hammond says. I think I'm the mom therapist of the group, just in my life. Hammonds grew up in Boulder, Colorado, and was raised by a single dad. A theater kid, she begged her dad to audition for roles on Broadway, but when she'd make it to the last round, she'd told she was too tall. I guess I was just a tall 12-year-old, but also the main thing was that 12-year-old boys don't grow as fast as 12-year-old girls, she says. She's now a respectable 5'7". Her dad took her to walk around Central Park after and suggested maybe she should try film. The switch paid off. In 2020, she acted in the Emmy-winning docuseries The Social Dilemma, and then in 2021, starred in the Disney Channel original movie Under Wraps and its sequel. Freakier Friday is her biggest role to date, and still, she manages to stand toe-to-toe with Curtis, an acting legend. Their relationship is an emotional highlight of the film, which is full of callbacks to the original, but also has a beating heart of its own. "I've looked up to Jamie for so long," Hammonds says. The major comic relief, like in the original, is in how the teenagers take on the mannerisms of adults, and vice versa. To pull off some level of believability, Curtis and Hammonds spent a lot of time just watching each other, paying attention to how the other moved as a person and as a character. "Sometimes she would clock me," Hammonds says. "I remember when she was like, 'You go like this a lot.'" She makes a gesture of pushing her hair out of her face. At the time, she had curtain bangs that constantly got in her eyes. "I play with my hair a lot, and she talks with her hands a lot." Hammonds and Curtis share a moving scene near the end of the film, where Lily, in Tess's body, admits that she's scared to lose the memory of her mom, but that she's come around to the idea of a fresh start after all, that she needs more family, not less. It's a very sweet moment that they share, because it's rare that you see a teenager comforting an adult who's weeping like that, Hammonds notes. Filming that scene changed Hammonds' brain chemistry, she says. It was at the end of a long day, and they pulled it off in only a few takes with their director, Nisha Ganatra. "The biggest thing we had to remember was just to be vulnerable and honest with each other," she says. "We are locking eyes in that scene for a majority of it. We even talked about it, too, as soon as we locked eyes. It's like no one else was there. The cameras disappeared. There's no director watching behind the monitor. There's no one fixing the lights. There literally was no one there as soon as we were looking at each other." After they finished the scene, Hammonds remembers that Curtis went up to Hammonds' real-life dad, who was on set that day, and kissed him on the cheek. "She just thanked him for, I don't even know, me, I guess," she smiles. "My dad was sobbing when he saw it on set. Then when he saw it in the final product, he was like, 'Oh my God, it looks even better all put together.'" It was also fun to watch the dynamic between Hammonds and Butters. Butters, who has been acting professionally since she was 14, was the first person Hammonds met during the filming process. "When they told me that I was going to be doing the chemistry read with her, I was freaking out," Hammonds says. "I am a huge fan of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, one of my favorite movies of all time, and part of that was because of Julia. She is phenomenal in that. In my childhood bedroom, I have a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood poster. She's on the poster. It seriously was cosmic." The chemistry also felt kind of cosmic. Later, the casting team told us that they actually had left us in a room because they just heard us laughing so much, she grins. They're like, "We don't need to bring them into the audition room yet. We're just going to leave them hanging out because they sound like they're having fun. I love that girl so much." Lily and Harper bring to life a major theme in the film, the power that teens do and do not have, and how they take agency over their lives in small, important ways. That, as they grow up in the world and learn how to respect boundaries, teenagers are deserving of respect, too. Hammond says she's always been someone who goes after what she wants, but that she also has people-pleasing tendencies. She's learning to develop her own boundaries, too. "I'm always like, yes, of course, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do this, even when I'm super drained or super tired," she admits. "Because I'm scared of being seen as someone who complains or someone who's taking an opportunity for granted. But I've learned that there's a difference between complaining And then also just listening to your body and being like, I can't do this right now. It's something she talked about with Lohan, who also began her career with Disney and who has only recently made her way back into the public eye after years of dealing with the pressures of her career and fame. She's had an awesome and insane journey, and it's so inspiring. She's such a wonderful human. It's so lovely to see her succeed still, Hammond says. She did mention to Julia and I the other day that one of the biggest things she's had to learn in her career was how to say no and how to set boundaries for herself, especially because she's now a new mom. This job is my favorite thing, but it can be very overwhelming and chaotic. It's important to take time for yourself and prioritize your mental and physical health. It was very inspiring to hear her be like, it's okay to say no. Being inspired and empowered by Lindsay Lohan, pop culture really is a circle. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. For Social Security's 90th anniversary, I want Gen Z to know it's there for them, too. This article was written by Aparna Ramakrishnan on August 13th. As we celebrate Social Security's 90th anniversary, I have a confession. Growing up, I never believed the program would be there for me when I retired. Honestly, I didn't know much about Social Security until college. My opinions came from overhearing my parents talk about its supposedly dwindling returns. Like many in Gen Z, I thought of Social Security as a distant, unreliable promise. I was wrong. Social Security is a social insurance program that provides retirement, disability, and survivor benefits to workers and their families. Embedded in the nation's economic and social structure, Social Security has never missed a payment since its inception. Social Security is the bedrock of retirement security, but it goes much further than that. Workers who are disabled can apply for disability insurance, and their families can also receive benefits. Survivor benefits are a lifeline for children of deceased workers. To many people's surprise, Social Security is one of the nation's largest programs benefiting children. Around 9% of all children in the United States, 6.2 million, received income from Social Security in 2023. This figure includes children who received benefits as dependents of retired, disabled, or deceased workers, and those who lived with parents or guardians who received Social Security. In 2023, 959,000 children were lifted out of poverty due to Social Security. Many people believe that Social Security will not be able to pay out benefits in the future. In reality, Social Security's trust fund, built up to pre-fund part of the retirement of the large baby boomer generation, is currently projected to run dry in 2034. This does not mean that Social Security will vanish. Social Security is funded by beneficiaries through payroll contributions, also known as FICA, Federal Insurance Contributions Act, which taxes wages, that is, the money a worker receives in their paycheck. As long as there are people paying into Social Security, there will be people receiving benefits. Under the current projections, Social Security will pay out 81% of benefits in 2034. This projection is only if Congress does not act, which is highly unlikely due to the popularity of the program. According to polling from the National Academy of Social Insurance, 73% of Americans aged 21 to 24 say that Social Security will be important or very important to their monthly income when they retire. 81% of Americans aged 21 to 34 want Congress to bring more money into Social Security rather than cutting benefits. The package they support includes raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans who currently stop paying into Social Security after their first $176,100 in income, as well as gradually increasing everyone's contributions into Social Security. Many of my Gen Z peers already benefit from Social Security. There is a 1 in 4 chance that a 20-year-old will become disabled before retirement age. Social Security disability insurance is a critical lifeline for those in their 20s and 30s who are disabled. Others in my generation received Social Security's survivor benefits as children when their parents died or became disabled. Social Security is even more important for my generation, which is facing crippling student debt and skyrocketing housing costs, than it is for older generations. Social Security provides stability and a guarantee as we approach retirement. Even if I am not able to save as much money throughout my working years as I hope, Social Security will be there for me as I age. From working at the ice cream shop down the street to internships during college, I have already been paying into Social Security for over 5 years. Our generation is already funding the system, and our generation will be the one to shape reforms. Over the next decade, major changes will take place to ensure Social Security stays solvent. Justice across generations matters. We inherit this system, and it is our responsibility to sustain it. Social Security was created 90 years ago in response to the deep inequality during the widespread economic hardship of the Great Depression. Today, the program needs to evolve to become more inclusive, reflect changes in the economy, and pay out full benefits for decades to come. Social Security's future is in our hands. Let's show up for it, just as it shows up for us in our times of greatest need. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Taylor Swift, The Life of a Showgirl, Fan Theories, From Copper Oxidation to a Midnight's Sister Album. This article was written by Kara Nesvig on August 12th. A new Taylor Swift album cycle is officially upon us, and with that comes plenty of fan theories. Swifties are buzzing over what TS12, formerly known as The Life of a Showgirl, will entail. Who produced the album? What is it about? Does Travis Kelce make an appearance? What's with all the orange and mint green? Swift dropped the news after a countdown on her official website, which ticked off the hours until 12:12 a.m. on August 12th. Then, she unveiled the album title in a 12-second video clip from her upcoming appearance on the Kelce Brothers podcast, New Heights, much to the delight of Travis and his older brother, Jason. We answer all your burning questions about Taylor Swift's 12th album, The Life of a Showgirl. We don't know when The Life of a Showgirl will officially drop, but until then, fans are busy putting on their detective hats to crack any clues and Easter eggs. Ahead, check out some of the most compelling fan theories about the 12th Taylor Swift album, The Life of a Showgirl. Theory 1. A Vegas residency for The Life of a Showgirl. Ever since Britney Spears made the Las Vegas residency cool, celebs have flocked to the desert casinos for long-running or limited-time shows, including Lady Gaga, the Backstreet Boys, and Adele. Is Taylor headed to Vegas? The showgirl of it all has some fans thinking she could be making the Sphere her new home base for a while. She did tour the globe for literal years on the Eras Tour, so maybe she wants something a bit more permanent for the next tour. Theory 2. Copper oxidation as a metaphor. Yes, you read that right. Some Swifties brilliantly posited that the orange and mint theme is a reference to the passage of time, or possibly how pretty shiny things can tarnish. Theory 3. TLOAS is a Midnight's sister album. Was The Life of a Showgirl supposed to be released after Midnight's, not the Tortured Poets Department? Maybe. Some fans believe she's been teasing Showgirl much longer than we thought, including with her orange and green outfit in the anti-hero music video and all the sparkly costumes she wore in the Bejeweled video and two red carpets around that time. After all, this is what she said about the making of Tortured Poets during the Eras Tour. Tortured Poets is an album I think more than any of my albums that I've ever made, I needed to make it. It was really a lifeline for me. Just the things I was going through and the things I was writing about. It kind of reminded me of why songwriting is something that actually gets me through my life, and I never had an album where I needed songwriting more than I needed it on Tortured Poets. Theory 4. The Return of Max Martin. This one is less fan theory than a Taylor started it, as the artist herself dropped a new playlist called And Baby, That's Show Business for You, of songs produced by the legendary Swedish producer Max Martin and his producing partner Shellback, both of whom have worked on some of Swift's most popular songs. Theory 5. The soundtrack of a new documentary. Given that the Eras Tour ran for almost 2 years, it would make sense if Swift turned the record-breaking show into a documentary. There's already a concert movie. Some fans think that the title of The Life of a Showgirl sounds like a natural fit for a doc, and the new music would appear as the soundtrack. If we know anything about Swift, it's that she loves to keep us guessing and is always more than a few steps ahead. So consider us on Taylor Watch until The Life of a Showgirl drops, which could be very soon indeed. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Conan Gray accidentally ghosted bestie Olivia Rodrigo when they first met. This article was written by Ashley Carter on August 16th. Olivia Rodrigo and Conan Gray have a sweet and enviable musician friendship, but as it turns out, their beginning had a not-so-meet-cute moment. The two singers gave fans some insight into their friendship dynamic this week in an Interview magazine article published on August 15, 2025. The interview coincided with Gray's fourth studio album drop, Wishbone, and the pair detail the creative process. Rodrigo joked that she's a bad interviewer because there's so little that I actually don't know about this album process. In true bestie fashion, they took fans back to 2020, during the COVID-19 lockdowns, and how their friendship first blossomed, despite a teeny tiny misunderstanding. Rodrigo was working on her debut album, Sour, with producer Dan Nigro, while Gray was working on his second album with him. Gray said that since it was during the pandemic, We literally saw nobody, even vaguely in our age range, for an entire year. Until one day, he saw Rodrigo leaving the studio. "I think you were kind of midway through Sour," Gray recalls. "I was walking in, and I remember seeing you and being like, 'Oh my God, a person!'" Gray and Rodrigo both joked that the only person they saw outside of their families was Nigro. Then Gray asked Rodrigo if he should talk about the text, which turned out to be Rodrigo asking Gray if he wanted to go on a COVID walk one of these days. Gray's response? Absolutely nothing. "You gave me your number, and I had a childhood neighbor growing up named Olivia," Gray explained. "So I received a text from an Olivia a week later, and it's like, 'Hey, want to hang out?'" He continued, "And I was like, 'What? Why is my childhood neighbor texting me to hang out in Texas? She knows that I moved. Does she think I'm back home or something?' I literally was so weirded out because this was my neighbor. Like, we weren't super close friends or anything, so I just ignored it fully." Rodrigo says she was so sad after her pure question was ignored. "And I was like, 'God, he effing hates me. I don't even warrant a response,'" she said. The two then discussed that their next meeting was a dinner at Nigro's house when Rodrigo boldly brought up her unanswered text. "I was like, 'Oh, I texted you,' and you were like, 'Oh my God, I thought that was a different girl. Holy S,'" Rodrigo said. To avoid any more confusion, Gray has since changed Olivia Rodrigo's name in his phone to Olivia effing Rodrigo. "It's still that in your phone," Rodrigo said. "But shout out to my neighbor Olivia," Gray joked. Conan Gray and Olivia Rodrigo have seemingly become a dynamic pop duo after they finally became friends. The pair have performed at musical festivals back to back, walked the red carpet together, and shown support for one another on social media. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.